Coming up on today's show...
Parts of Asheville feel like Nashville did 20 years ago. So Nashville was a big town, and now it's becoming a small city. It's wonderful and has a lot to offer. Asheville, it kind of allows me to repeat the experience I've had in Nashville.
Don't tell me that you want me. Don't tell me what you need.
Welcome to another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment, featuring interviews with guests who are having success in entertainment, primarily music. I am Bruce Wozniak, talking to guests who are singers, songwriters, musicians, recording artists, and more from the worldwide music community. Get in touch with me by writing to podcast@nhte.net. Or instead of email, you can DM me through the @NowHearThisEntertainment Instagram account. Remember, too, about the other free option for interaction with this show that I've been mentioning each of the last 3 weeks, Featured Up, which you can find a link to in this episode's description.
I don't want to cry.
Joining me today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from Nashville, my guest is a singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, whose latest single just came out 2 weeks ago, with an album coming in mid-August. To date, he has recorded 5 critically acclaimed albums. His 2022 album charted number one added on NACC Folk, as did his 12-song release at the end of last August. On the heels of that project, he amassed 100,000 monthly Spotify listeners and over 2 million cumulative views across Vevo and YouTube. In addition to being a poet, he also has had a career as an entrepreneur that we will hear about today. You've been hearing a song of his called How to Bleed. Welcome to Now Hear This Entertainment, Chris Bollinger.
Thanks, Bruce. Happy to be here.
Chris, thanks for making time to speak with me today. Before we get into your new releases, let's have you start first by sharing with the audience all about the song of yours that was just playing during the intro called How to Bleed, including what the song is about, when you wrote it, why you wrote it, perhaps even where you were when you wrote it, and of course, who you worked with on it.
Sure. How to Bleed came out on my previous album, one of the singles that we released from it, recorded with a number of my band members here in Nashville, Tennessee, and really came together well in the studio. I write mostly by myself on guitar, and so I hear the songs hundreds of times with just me and a guitar before getting in the studio. And so a lot of what the listener's hearing is really the first time I've ever heard it that way also. And that song was really inspired by the concept of trying to reach out to someone, be close to someone at the same time, you know, feeling like you're, you know, a universe away. And that's really what the song it goes through is, you know, you don't need to tell me what you want. I already know. I know how to bleed. I mean, and it's basically the gist of the song.
Now, go back to when you said the listeners a lot of times are hearing it for the first time just as well as you are. Explain what you mean by that.
So there's various songwriting styles. Some songwriters really have a set regimen and they co-write a lot. So they're used to writing with other instrumentalists, maybe 2 or 3 at a time. Some bands get together, and you've probably seen this on historical biographies or so on, where a band will just get together for 3 weeks, 3 months in the studio, and everything will come together as a band. I write more by myself, I guess more of a folk style writing approach, where it's really just me and my guitar. And so we're the only two who've ever heard it. It's just me and my guitar. And as I'm working through it, the first time it comes out, as I go back through and maybe refine it a little bit, I've heard it over and over in that fashion. But when I get in the studio, it really takes on a whole new life. It can become almost a different creature than it was to start with. It's always got the same potential that it ever had, but it's kind of like pushing a bird out of a nest, I guess. It takes flight, and you know, maybe it flies in a slightly different direction. That part of the creation is just as exciting for me as the first time I write it.
I'm curious, though, 5 weeks ago on this show, my guest was John Ellison, who wrote the R&B standard Some Kind of Wonderful. And on that episode, John talked about the fact that he has always only written by himself. And I said, once your stock started to rise and you write a song like Some Kind of Wonderful, Everybody wants a part of you. Everybody's going to say, we should write together. We should write together. And Chris, as you know, you live in the capital of we should write together. So because that is your style, how do you respond in situations where I'm sure there must be plenty of other Nashville songwriters who are saying to you, Chris, we should write together sometime?
Yeah, and that's something that I am not ruling out. And, you know, the fact that one person, one songwriter, one creator has a preferred style and the other has another doesn't mean that it shouldn't happen. It's something that I'm looking to take on. If I get out of that, the same thing I get out of going in the studio and, you know, having the drummer make this suggestion, the guitar make that, the keys say maybe we should put a solo in here, I can only imagine by sitting down with songwriters, I would probably find that to be just as thrilling.
So it's not a case of I already kind of have my go-to line or I politely turn people away and explain to them that I prefer to write alone.
Correct. It's something I definitely consider. It's not something I put my energies toward at this point. But, you know, the creative process is one, and people ask me a lot, you know, do you think you're ever going to get bored with it? Are you ever concerned there's not another song? And I've never been concerned about that. And part of the reason is there's so many more venues. I might just be able to write with me and my guitar forever. But that said, if for some reason I'm not feeling that, if songs aren't coming to me, there's all these other creative outlets that I have even yet to tap into.
Such as what? Because you threw me when you used the word venues. I'm thinking only, shame on me, of performance venues.
Well, that is one venue. And speaking of that, I really don't tour much. So that's a whole, for the literal meaning of venue, that's a whole nother aspect that can even add another layer to the creative process. But I'm thinking more in terms of more regimented songwriting. And I don't mean that to be diminutive or disrespectful. I mean more of a traditional Nashville songwriter's approach, something I haven't attempted. I've not gone in the studio with my band without songs, for example, or with just fragments of songs. I've always had a full song that we modify and see what we can do with it. But I've never gone in and said, I've got a great opening verse. Let's see where it goes from here. So there are other opportunities to expand on the songwriting process.
I like it. I like it. Folks, you heard me say in the intro that Chris just released a new single 2 weeks ago. Make sure you stay to the end of this episode because he's going to tell us all about that song and I am going to play it. But in the meantime, Chris, like I said, we will hear and have you talk about the song later, but that's going to be on the album that I said during the intro is coming out in mid-August. As interested as I am to hear about the fact that this is a double album, clarify that for me because I've read that it will be released in part one and part two installments. So does that mean part one in mid-August and then part two a week or a month or 3 months later, or am I misunderstanding the released in two installments approach? But then also, by the way, do certainly tell us about the album project overall itself.
Certainly. The double release will be more like months than weeks. And some of the thinking on that is that it is a double album and it is actually laid out almost like a series of short stories or vignettes. There's 23 songs, but there's an introduction, a chapter one, two, a three, a conclusion, and then an epilogue song. So it's really laid out like a series of short stories, and it breaks pretty well right at the end of side two. So we decided just to let that kind of stand alone and percolate, and then release kind of the second half of the story later, once the listeners had a chance to kind of hear the first half.
I'm curious, though, in the intro, I referred to an album project of yours that just came out at the end of last August. That was a 12-song release. Now, we're in May, and this is coming out in mid-August, so I don't know at what point you are in the production of this August 16th release. But that being said, 23 songs, that's pretty aggressive for someone who just had a 12-song release come out at the end of August. What did that timeline look like in terms of being where we're in May, and you can already talk about a 23-song album that's coming out in 3 months, less than 3 months?
Well, that's pretty much how my songwriting goes. By the time we're in studio, I'm sort of on the next album.
Wow.
Already. And it's made me wonder if why when people go to a concert and they want to hear the oldies and artists as well, I'm going to play my new ones because that's where my head's been for the past year. So in addition to promoting the new songs, it's probably where the artist's head is at that time. So basically, when we go in and lay down tracks. We'll have the basic tracks done, vocals, background vocals, overdubs if we want some different solo instruments. You know, mixing and mastering still and production still needs to occur. So during that time, I am well into the next album. And generally, we'll be back in studio, really before the album's release, we'll be back in studio to start the next one.
Wow.
I don't know that that holds on forever, but it's been a prolific number of years here recently, and so far it shows no signs of stopping.
Fantastic, fantastic. Well, congratulations on that, as well as the new single. As I said, we'll have you talk about it later, and I'll play it at the end. Here is something fascinating about such a huge undertaking, meaning a double album release. Up until what I think is recently, your time has actually been divided between music and a career as an entrepreneur in a completely unrelated field. Tell the audience what this is that I'm referring to.
Yeah, actually, I've been devoting a lot of my time for the past number of years to a solar power business that my brother and I and a couple partners formed. And so I've been devoting a lot of energy and a lot of my creative energy into the entrepreneurial world. We've actually grown one of the largest renewable power plant development companies in the States, which essentially means that we're the folks who do the front end work on pulling together solar farms, for example. And it's been good work. It's been good for our team, good for some polar bears, I'm sure, out there. I haven't met any of them, but I'm sure they appreciate it also.
Well, you know, I hear that, and the knee-jerk reaction is to think, well, this guy's been dealing with distractions. But I wonder, Chris, is there some element of it? Maybe it is getting me into a different atmosphere. Maybe it's giving me a mental break from music. Or maybe it's I have actually found some inspiration in that work for my music.
I would say it's more of a direction of creativity and energy at any one time. And certainly, I really began writing poetry way back when and then moved into songwriting. And so there's just a amount of energy that goes around in my mind at times. It really helps to redirect it. And then when I bring it back to music, for example, it helps me be even more focused. So I think having different outlets is really, really helpful. And probably the same for my entrepreneurial job, being able to play guitar and write as an outlet probably then helps me focus more on that too.
Yeah, that's a great point, because I only looked at it one way. I look at you as a musician, a recording artist, and the tendency is, right, listeners, to think of this as something that's taking time away from helping him develop his music career. But when you flip it that way, Chris, I think you make an excellent point that because of all the work that you were doing, you probably did appreciate your music even more because it was a different outlet for you to be able to put your corporate hat away, corporate in quotation marks, and say, okay, now I can completely change my mindset. I can get some release through writing and performing.
Absolutely. It's probably, you know, folks who, you know, like to run, for example, it really becomes an outlet that they don't run all day, every day, but it helps balance their other life and their energy, something.
Yeah, great comparison. There are going to be Chris Bollinger fans who come to this episode of Now I Hear This Entertainment. Thank you, by the way. Hello to you folks. Thank you for joining us. And do please check out other episodes of the podcast. But over my more than 10 years of doing this show every week, I have gotten listeners from 164 countries around the world. So there are going to be people just being introduced to you for the first time, Chris. So you started to tip your hand that way. Take us back to your early years, meaning where you were raised, your early influences, and then what you play, since I introduced you as a multi-instrumentalist.
Certainly. When people ask, I say I'm from the Midwest, because it's not a simple or a short answer, but I will give a short version. So I was born up in South Dakota and then lived mostly in Missouri and Illinois. My father was a traveling salesman, so we bounced around quite a bit. And you know, I've lived in little communities. I've lived on a farm. I've lived in the suburbs. I've lived in cities. So I've had a pretty broad background as far as you know, the types of environments that I was introduced to, and I don't regret it a bit. I would recommend it. I know that most people's lives probably don't lend themselves to bouncing around that much, but for me, it really worked out well. And as far as my musical training, you know, I started, I suppose, like a lot of folks do, on piano when I was much younger. My father played the electric organ, so I don't know if it was my idea or was highly inspired by hearing him play, and took piano lessons for quite some time, and then switched in, I guess, middle school or junior high, whatever you want to call it, to violin. I thought I was going to be playing the fiddle, and someone handed me the violin and said the same thing, and it sure didn't sound like it, because one, I didn't play it very well, and two, obviously the music's a little different. So, but stuck with that all the way up through high school, and then picked up a guitar late in high school, just took a few lessons on that, and then really kind of self-taught.
Let me jump in here, because before we get too far away from this, I don't want to forget my question. It sounds like piano you had pretty good control of. Do you still play it to this day? Meaning all this music that you record, are you just playing guitar on the albums that you're putting out? Or is it, I also play piano? It sounds like you're going to tell me you do not play fiddle enough that you would probably get a Nashville player. What does that look like?
That is a true statement. I do not play piano or fiddle anymore. And really around town, probably in many towns, and certainly in Nashville, the talent that is, you know, immediately available is pretty tremendous. And, you know, as I alluded to earlier, I really enjoy the process of letting the songs get in a different interpretation, having other instrumentalists on them. So I really do enjoy the process. Even if I could play all those instruments, I think I would probably want to hear what the songs sound like in someone else's technique and vision.
I like that. I like that. So let's get back to your earlier years. If I have this correct, you actually started recording music when you were in college. Is that correct? And if so, what did that period of time in your life look like in terms of managing to fit in something like studio time if you were a college student?
Yeah, I guess the recording that I did in college wasn't even in studio. It was, you know, I'm sure the recordings are floating around somewhere. So it was really more balanced with, you know, when me and my buddies could get together at that point. And really never officially in studio at that point.
But was that a case of, I knew in college that this is what I wanted to do as a career, was write and record and perform music? Or was that, I was a college student, a lot of kids do music in college and never have any intention of pursuing it after that?
Yeah, that was a point where I was sort of balancing poetry, which I started writing at a young age, but I never put the poetry with the piano or the poetry with the violin. And then when I started playing guitar, I started to kind of pull the two together. And a poem is not a song. A song is not a poem. So this is a bad idea. But it was where I first started to get into the concept of maybe starting to write my own stuff. And that's really what it was, my first dabbling in seeing what we could do with me and a guitar and a couple of buddies and what was some original type of music sound like.
Okay, so while we're talking about creating music, share what your vision is, your philosophy regarding songwriting.
Yeah, I really have a pretty simple and distilled approach to songwriting, and I suppose it might apply to creative endeavors in general, but to me it really boils down to three things. It's observation, empathy, and rhythm. And certainly the first part, observation, I believe is necessary in order to have a work of art or a song that might be somewhat universal. It's very tough just to write from your own personal experience and have something that's necessarily going to reach and connect with people. It could, certainly, but by observing others and observing the environment around, one is more likely to be able to intertie personal experience with the external world, and therefore it's more likely to relate and reach people. The empathy is, you know, not just stream of consciousness, but actually trying to understand, you know, how the other party's feeling, how the other party could be a city, could be an animal, could be a person, but trying to relate to it rather than just have a stream of consciousness about observing it. And then finally, the rhythm in a song, that makes plenty of sense. I guess a painting or a movie would have its own type of rhythm to it, but that's the part that, you know, makes it, rather than an essay, I suppose, a creative work of art. So I think about it in those three terms.
So two follow-up questions then. On rhythm, it makes me wonder, are you someone that when you do have an idea for a song, is it usually lyrics first and melody second? Is it the other way around? Or are you blessed to be able to do both at the same time when a song idea comes to you?
Yeah, I will say that early on when I was dabbling with it and I was trying to really force the poetry into song form, then I led with lyrics exclusively. And now I do either. One thing I do, though, is almost always right from the top. And this goes back to one of the previous topics we were talking about. It's traditional songwriting in Nashville often starts with a hook.
Yeah.
And I'm not opposed to that, but it's just not the way I generally write. It could be exciting and really unleash some new songs, certainly. But I usually write from the top. And in the lyrics, I almost always have a guitar in hand. And I'm almost always attempting to do the words and the melody simultaneously. That doesn't mean that one doesn't get out in front of the other, because that certainly does happen. But I'll usually write from the top and get both going at once. And certainly sometimes the guitar takes over and sometimes the lyrics take over. But that's the approach I take.
And my follow-up question, I want to go back to when you were talking about empathy, because I made the mistake of looking at that word and assigning to it, I don't want to say a negative connotation, but thinking that that can only be good for ballads. And I thought, well, what if he's out somewhere and he sees some people celebrating and they're happy and maybe overhears what the good news is, and you want to write a positive, upbeat, happy song about that with major chords, and empathy doesn't seem to, but you use the word relatable. So is it fair, Chris, to substitute the word relatability for empathy?
I think that is a fair replacement, absolutely. And again, my thinking, and it's not just something I sat down and academically tried to look forward, this is more of a reflective looking back on how do I do this, why do I do this, is that a song really needs to be both personal and universal. And without the empathy, it can just become quite personal without any universal aspects to it. So that's really the relatability, yes, is the key there.
I like it. I'm joined today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from Nashville by singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist Chris Bollinger. Visit his official website at chrisbollinger.com. I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. Once you land on his website, look for the merch option to be able to buy CDs and vinyl of his original music. Digitally, purchase downloads of Chris's music from Apple Music and other online digital music retailers. At the top of his website, you will see links for social media so you can engage with Chris through Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram. There is also a Spotify logo there so that you can link over to follow him and stream his music through that platform. You've been hearing us talking about his new music. Mark August 16th on your calendar for the release of his newest album. And as I said before, stick around for us to hear him talk about the new single that just came out 2 weeks ago. You will want to get that song for yourself too. Meanwhile, I am going to be looking for your questions, your comments about this episode of Now Hear This Entertainment, or maybe even suggestions about just the show in general. You can do all of that for free through a platform called Featured Up. In the description for this episode, regardless of what platform you are listening to this interview through, you will see a link to go over to my page on that website. Follow that link, and then on the page it takes you to, send me your comments about this or any episode of NHTE for that matter. What's particularly cool is you can do it via audio instead of typing out your questions or comments if you prefer, up to 60 seconds worth of audio. And by the way, I also have a Featured Up logo on my podcast website, nhte.net, so you can tap or click that to go to this page of mine on their site. Chris, let's go back, since I was just giving out a bunch of plugs for you, let's go back to something that you mentioned in the first half of the show, which is the absence of live shows. If people go on your website, they're not going to see a section labeled tour or live dates or something like that. So explain that as it relates to someone who puts out so much music, because the thinking would be that with this album coming out in mid-August that, oh, this guy's probably going to be out touring in full force after the release of that. And it sounds like you're not someone who follows that traditional pattern of write, record, release, tour, and then start that all over again.
That's correct. And it's a bit of an oddity, certainly. And I guess a lot of singer-songwriters, fans really start with touring, and like you said, it becomes a cycle of touring, recording, releasing, touring. And that's something I haven't had the I guess, the luxury opportunity to do, because largely due to this business that I founded and really takes up a lot of my time, makes it pretty impractical to tour. That said, we are seeing what we can do here, you know, for 2025 and beyond. So, but we certainly won't be touring this year. But, you know, this is not impossible to work out. It just takes a little more coordination than under other circumstances.
So then just to clarify, it has been a product of having your other business as opposed to, I just don't like doing it. I have no interest in touring.
Absolutely correct. I enjoy playing and, you know, I've had a chance to do it more informally. But as far as setting up a six-week tour with my other endeavors, it's been quite challenging. But with enough time and preparation, we're going to see what we can do.
Well, let's go back to the new album that's coming out in mid-August. Tell us more about the album itself, meaning the concept, so to speak, but also, what is the Bomb Shelter Trilogy?
Yeah, we can start with the Bomb Shelter Trilogy. So I released a couple albums some time ago, a decade ago, and then that's really when, about the time this business really took off, and I haven't been touring, as we mentioned. Also, it really took me away from getting back in the studio, and both from the timing and just where my energies were focused. I did continue to write and basically had, you know, over 100 songs written.
Wow.
And I was actually talking to one of my buddies who happens to work with me at my day job one day, and I was playing a few songs through, and he's local and very in tune with the music scene in Nashville and actually co-produced these three albums. So I was mentioned in passing, I got 100 songs like this. And he said, well, what are you doing, man? And so so that's what got me back in the studio. It was something that simple, really. There's not anything more to it than someone reaching out to me and just giving me that one little nudge, which probably in people's lives that happens all the time and probably should happen more. And so that's what got back in the studio. And at the time, we had so many songs that we decided, why don't we think about this as more than one album?
Mm.
And we decided, let's think about doing a few albums here and see where that takes us. And we've got enough material that we can hit this pretty fast cycle that we were talking about earlier. And so we did. We went into studio and recorded a true rendition. And then as we got, you know, I got back in the studio and kept writing. And then the next album, How to Bleed, is almost all new songs. We only used a couple of the ones from the decade-long catalog at that point. And then basically by the time we were done with that, you know, I got my juices flowing again. And so then this Waiting to Be Seen, again, 23 songs, and I think 21 or 22 of them are brand new.
Wow.
The trilogy was because we had a big catalog, but that's we didn't end up really using it for the second two albums.
But then explain the meaning of the title Bomb Shelter Trilogy.
Well, the Bomb Shelter is the name of the studio we're recording over here in East Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of a dive bar of studios, mm-hmm. which is kind of more of my vibe anyway for bars and life in general, I guess. So, I have the vibe and the energy. I like that it's called the Bomb Shelter. One of my previous albums was titled Peace Bomb. So, kind of picked up where we left off a decade ago. So, you know, it felt like a new way to approach the music, but also, you know, not out of cap for the previous albums way back when.
Yeah, but it sounds like you're saying that it was fun, it was a clever title, but it did not put any kind of pressure on you of, I need to follow a certain theme throughout all three of these albums that we're going to release under the Bomb Shelter Trilogy. That's reading too much into it.
Correct. And there is themes just because the way the music runs. Really, these themes are, the true rendition is really about freedom. And then How to Bleed is really, to put it more in a simple term of freedom, is more about rock and roll. And then this Waiting to Be Seen double album, it's more about connection, which are all, in some regards, you know, various views of freedom. True rendition is a little more serious. How to Bleed is just a little more of a romp. And then Waiting to Be Seen really takes it to, you know, what does freedom mean within a relationship, or how one views oneself within a relationship or the world.
But just to be clear, though, and the only stupid question is the one not asked, this is still carrying, I believe I saw it described as country/classic rock sound, correct?
Yeah, I don't know how to do much anything other than that, really. So, but, But it's the sounds I grew up with, and it's really what again, classic country, classic rock, which kind of is what folks call Americana, I suppose. But I'm, you know, big time originally listening to probably, you know, Willie Waylon Merle, and then really got more into some of the rock, Beatles, Stones, and then in the songwriters, Townsend, Bob Dylan. And that's really my evolution in listening to music, which I presume has a pretty big influence on what I write.
Yeah, yeah, and thank you. I love those examples. I think that gives the audience a much clearer picture. I mentioned that your music is available on your website on CD and vinyl. I have asked a number of guests about the resurgence of vinyl, but I would love for you, Chris, to speak about CDs, since I do still see artists releasing music in that format, despite how much it seems to have fallen away as an option for a lot of music listeners.
CDs, actually, I was surprised. I'd heard the other day that they actually were still outselling vinyl until fairly recently, which actually shocked me. I would not have guessed that. I thought vinyl had probably surpassed them years and years ago. But CDs, the convenience and sound quality is kind of hard to beat in some respects. That said, I have both CDs and vinyl. I'm not talking about my own music. I'm talking about what I, you know, would listen to other than myself. And for the convenience of the CD, not having to get up and flip it and so on, things like that, is something that I've always appreciated. That said, sometimes I'm feeling like just grabbing a beer and flipping that vinyl every 20 minutes. So,
well, and what impresses me is, audience, if you go back to Chris saying that he's not someone who does the approach of write, record, release, and tour, you would think, well, he probably releases his music on CD so much so that he has that available at his merch table at his shows. And since that's not the case, I admire you, Chris, for saying it's just something that I still really like, as opposed to I do it as a merchandise item.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point. And the music industry today is certainly still going through a lot of changes and vastly different than it was years ago. And some folks can point to the cons, and other folks would point to the pros, and there's certainly some of each. But, you know, the ability to tour, to reach audience, and then to merch, I think is much higher than it used to be. You know, trying to differentiate oneself now might be more challenging. That said, 20 years ago, a lot of artists weren't even in the game, so to speak. So, you know, I look at it both ways, and, you know, merch is a great example of something that's available to the artists and the fans nowadays that might not have been as readily available years ago.
Well, and this is just my opinion. My opinion in 5 cents will get you a cup of coffee, a coworker of mine used to say. But if I go see someone perform and I go back to their merch table, it's just so much more convenient to buy something, quote unquote, as small as a CD, as opposed to walking out with an album under your arm and saying, okay, well, I guess I'll play this at some point. I, for one, still make sure that I have a CD player in my vehicle so that I can listen to music while I'm driving, music of my choice, as opposed to the radio or something else. So I'm taking my hat off and saying bravo to you, Chris, for saying this is something that I still intend. I assume, which is always a bad word, I assume that this new album in August will be vinyl, CD, and obviously digital.
Yep, absolutely. That's the plan. And I tell you, I agree with you walking out of a concert. What something I've never got, I've got a few on my wall, but something that I've never really fully got into because I just am afraid that I'm not going to get them out of there in good shape is concert posters. Because you've got to roll them up. They're big and bulky if you're going out afterwards. So I do have a few, but I know folks who are religious about those in every concert. I'm like, how do you get those home every time? You know, with it? So.
Yeah, the merch tables need to start being smart and selling poster tubes to carry it out in safely.
There you go. There you go.
7 weeks ago on episode 530 with Jeremy Parsons, we heard about his fascination with animation. Back in September, Chris, you released a video for As I Am, which has close to 600,000 views, and that was animated. How did the idea come about to do an animated video for As I Am, and was that just a one-time thing, or might there be more animated videos down the road for you?
Absolutely going to be more. It is something that really fits in, I think, with the vibe of this music. Like I said, it's a lot of classic country, classic rock songwriter influence. So there's, I guess, an element of nostalgia that runs through a lot of it. So the idea of animated video really fits in kind of with that vibe. And so it's just something we came up with. It's a way to do a video that would be a little different than a lot of things that are going on, as well as, you know, fit the vibe of the music. And so we've got that one. We did a video that's basically collage, and then we've got new animated ones coming out. So I think we'll continue to do that. You can do a lot more with animation too, as far as telling a story. And in fact, the story you can tell can go exactly along with the words. So you could, just like when you get in a studio, and like I said, the song can take a new path that maybe it hadn't been on with just me and a guitar once we put the other instruments in there. You can also use that animation to put a twist on the song that might not have been there just in the lyrics. So it's a fun way to keep expanding on the song.
Okay, but I do have to ask you, though, and maybe it's because we just heard last week during my interview with Lucky Harmon, we talked a lot about AI on that episode. Somebody recently sent me a music video of theirs and was so proud of it and did a big build-up and said, I'm going to email it to you. And so there was sort of some influence before I ever pressed play on it. But as soon as I did, I looked at it and I thought, oh, this was purely done with AI. This is not somebody doing animation in the way that I just referred to that you did yours for As I Am. What are your thoughts on AI as it relates to something like a video for one or more of your songs? Is it something that you would entertain, or is it, I've got a good animator, we've got a good system, if it ain't broke, don't fix it?
I'm not as big a believer in AI as some folks. Actually, I think it's neither artificial nor intelligent. So from that perspective, I'm a bit of a Luddite. I think it's extremely fast, you know, human-backed algorithms, which, again, is a useful process, I'm sure, and medium. That said, for the feel and the vibe of what we're doing and, you know, catching some more of that nostalgia and being able to continue to create, it's not something I would immediately embrace. I've open to lots of ways to keep pushing the songs forward. But the animation we did and are continuing to do on some of these videos really is kind of old-timey. I'll storyboard it. And again, sometimes I'm trying to put a new spin on the song. It's not necessarily the same view or thinking I had when I wrote it, but it's an interpretation. So I'll storyboard it. And then the animators really add a lot of the nuances and the twists and the turns. And so it's a collaborative process, which I'm just not sure, you know, an algorithm collaborates that much.
Yeah, very interesting. Very interesting. I read both Nashville and Asheville, Tennessee and North Carolina, as where you hang your hat these days. Is that correct? If so, how often do you, quote unquote, go back and forth between the two? And I guess, why Asheville?
I spend my time in those two places, you know, until I can permanently get to New Orleans. But I'd love both of those cities, and Nashville, obviously, for a music scene. Asheville has actually got a pretty good music scene, too. Parts of Asheville feel like Nashville did 20 years ago. So Nashville was a big town, and now it's becoming a small city. It's wonderful and has a lot to offer. Asheville, it kind of allows me to repeat the experience I've had in Nashville. So I guess I'm trying to get to have my cake and eat it, too, a little bit.
But what was the timeline? Which did you land in first, Nashville or Asheville? And regardless of the answer, even though I do want to hear it, how did Asheville come onto your radar as a place that you decided I want to put down roots in? Because when I asked you that first question, I thought you were going to say, oh, that's where my business is based.
This might not make sense, but my business is based in Chicago. So
the plot thickens.
So although I don't tour, I spend as much time on the road as if I were touring. So Nashville was first, and my folks live down in South Carolina. So when I go down to visit, I end up going through Asheville a lot. And it didn't take too many stops in Asheville to say this is a pretty good spot to be. Probably took me two stops, three maybe, just before I started really thinking on it.
Wow. Okay. Now talk to me about New Orleans. That just came out of left field when you said these two for the time being until I can get to New Orleans.
If we're talking about the cycle on which we record, we're going back in the studio this summer. We're actually going to record down in New Orleans. So it's on my mind, and it's a place that I've always, ever since I've been there, I've felt like I never really left.
Meaning that you've done business there, you've been there more than once, is that the case?
Yeah, business as well as, you know, we're traveling down there for getaways.
Wow, wow. And what is it about New Orleans? Because shame on me, I make the mistake of just kind of thinking of one sound coming from New Orleans, and it's not the Chris Bollinger sound.
Yeah, we are going to put some horns on this next album and see what happens. And we won't be the first ones to ever try this, and we'll see if we can do it right. I know the horns will be good, but we'll see how it all meshes up. But New Orleans has that, you know, the vibe and soul to it. As I mentioned, a lot of these songs really have, I guess, a nostalgia that runs through them, for lack of a better word. And New Orleans is about the most nostalgic place I've ever been.
Well said. Well said. I see that. We are going to close today with the brand new single that Chris released 2 weeks ago called Darlin' and Me. As you heard me say earlier, this will be on the upcoming album that's coming out in mid-August. Chris, before I let you go and I play that track, tell us all about this song first, if you would, please.
Yeah, this song is rock, and it is fun. It's about a typical day in the life of heading out to buy vegetables and cakes and then swinging by the Garden of Eden and then coming home to play Truth or Dare. So the typical day, I don't know for whom, but I guess for Darlin' and me. And then those are the verses. And, you know, there's some give and take. It's not all fun in those, but it's mostly just a fun day out. But then the chorus is a little more reflective, and it's the singer being a little more reflective and saying, man, if I was half as beautiful as half the things you see in me, you know, what a sight. And so it's someone being sort of reflective of really having this connection and then maybe not feeling quite up to it, or, you know, do you really see that in me? Because I'd sure like to feel that way all the time. You know, so that's really the vibe of it.
So if you think back to earlier in our conversation when you said you had 100 songs written and your buddy who works with you said, well, what are you doing? Meaning you need to get these all written. And you talked about that since then, you've written so many more, 21 of the 23 that are going to be on this new album. If I were to ask you about Darlin' and Me and said, Chris, do you remember where you were when you wrote that song? Is it, Bruce, I've written 150 songs, I couldn't tell you. Or do you remember it as though you wrote Darlin' and Me yesterday?
The verses are pretty recent. They were wrote here in Nashville. Part of the chorus was written years ago in Arizona, I think. And that's, I can't pinpoint it any more than that.
Wow. Still though, that's a good memory for, and I'm sure that it's probably closer to 200, if not more than that, because we're just talking about the 100 that you had before your buddy gave you the nudge and all these other ones that you've written since. So to me, that's always amazing, but I'm sure that the songwriter mind works in that way. There's so much visualization that goes on as you're writing the song that you probably take a step back and you do visualize where you were when you wrote certain songs. I wonder, did this one come out much different on the recording that we're about to hear from when you first wrote it?
Yeah, you'll hear some bass in here that'd be very hard to do on a guitar. And so some of the funk and the beat to it is something that really needs a full band to get that type of rhythm and syncopation going on. You'll hear some of the breakdowns of what I'm talking about.
All right. And folks, I'm anxious for you to hear it. But first, Chris, let me thank you so much for making time to be on Now Hear This Entertainment. Enjoy talking to you, and congratulations on the new single. And we'll be looking forward to the release of the album in August.
Well, I appreciate it.
My pleasure. And with that, I will wrap up another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment. My sincere thanks to singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist Chris Bollinger. Do visit his official website at chrisbollinger.com. As I mentioned before, I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. You heard him talk today about his new album coming in mid-August. Put a reminder in your phone specifically for August 16th, and then take action today to get the new single that you're about to hear. Remember that in the merch section of chrisbollinger.com, you can get his past releases on CD and vinyl. Look, too, for the links on his website for his social media. This morning, I followed him on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and I know he would appreciate you doing the same. The videos on his official YouTube channel have a combined total of almost 3.5 million views. Subscribe to Chris's channel and then watch and like the videos on there. For that matter, tell him you heard him and his music on Now Hear This Entertainment. Remember that at the top of his website, you will also see a Spotify link so you can go follow him and stream his music on that platform. I do truly hope that you like this show, that you're enjoying what I'm doing every week on the Now Hear This Entertainment podcast. If you've made it all the way to the end, thank you for having stuck with Chris and I, and I'm going to assume that that means that you do like the podcast. You can take action to let me know that you appreciate the work that I do to keep making this show happen every week, every month, more than 10 years without missing once by going on my podcast website, nhte.net, and then using the yellow Buy Me a Coffee logo that you will see there. This is not a sponsor. It's not affiliated with any brand or chain. It's just a fun way for you to send your support, your thanks to me, including a note that I will see when you utilize that option. You can also just head directly to buymeacoffee.com/BruceW. That's going to do it for episode 537. Thanks ever so much for listening. I'll send you out today with another song from Chris Bollinger. This is the one he just talked about. It's called Darlin' in Me.
Darlin' in me, hauling to the mall for some vegetables and eggs. She's teasing in her layers, me and all the players. Yeah, we mixing what it makes. Bringing home the bacon, ain't already. Whichever one it takes.